There have been times in my life when I have been accused of perhaps not being the most chipper, cheery, optimistic person on earth. There have been times in my life when I have been characterized as a tiny bit of a gloomy Eeyore type pessimistic character. But I have to tell you that in this morning's gospel reading, which Kathy just read, Jesus makes me look like a cheery, sunshine, lollipops and roses kind of optimistic sort of guy. Jesus gives, in Luke chapter 21, an incredibly dark and gloomy, foreboding, and threatening image of what life is about to bring in the lives of his audience. He speaks of wars and insurrections. He says there are going to be great earthquakes. There are going to be famines and plagues. There will be dreadful portents and great signs from heaven. He says they are going to be arrested and persecuted. They will be handed over to prison. They will be betrayed. Some of them will be put to death, and they will be hated by all. Yes, sign me up. Seriously, it doesn't get much darker, it seems to me, than all of that. But actually, it does get a little bit darker. Because even before he has said that, Jesus has foretold the greatest imaginable disaster for the Jewish people of his day. When some were speaking about the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and gifts dedicated to God, he said, "As for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down." Now you have to understand what the temple meant to the Jewish people of Jesus' day. This was the second temple. It was Herod's temple, the rebuilding of Solomon's temple. It had stood for 500 years in Jerusalem. It was for the Jewish people the center of their religious life. It was the center of their spirituality. It was the goal of every Jewish person at least once and as many times as possible to go up to Jerusalem and to be able to worship in this great temple. This was the place that told you that God is reliable. This was the place that told you there is a steady core of reliable goodness at the center of life. This was the place that reminded you that however bad things might look on the surface, there is something more. So for the temple, for Jesus to say, not one stone is going to be left upon another. The whole thing is going to be thrown down, was an utterly devastating prediction. And in fact, we know historically that in 70 Common Era, 40 years, just 40 years after Jesus said this, that in fact the temple was razed to the ground. That the troops of General Titus had surrounded Jerusalem. They had given a 143-day siege, keeping the city blocked in, cut off from any support. And then they stormed into the city. They razed the temple to the ground. And it was an utter tragedy. A terrible disaster for the Jewish people. The Jews were scattered over the earth, leaving Jerusalem and Judah barren, empty, and utterly forsaken. It's a disaster. And it's in that context that we need to see this. It's very, it sounds to me a lot like the words of the poet, William Butler Yeats. William Butler Yeats, at the turn of the 20th century, near the beginning of the 20th century, wrote a poem in which he used the image of a falcon. A falcon stands on the hand of the falconer, and then at the command of the falconer, the falcon soars off into the sky seeking prey. And the falcon is safe. The falcon will return to home as long as the falcon can hear the voice of the falconer's call. Yeats says, turning, turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Yeats wrote those words in 1919, in the shadow of the First World War, when it must have looked absolutely as if the center cannot hold. Civilization lay in ruins. Death was everywhere. Suffering and pain and agony seemed to be the only characteristics of life. And it's in that context, it's in the face of that kind of reality that Jesus says to those to whom he is speaking, that Jesus says something utterly ridiculous, almost laughable, completely ludicrous. Jesus says to those who are listening to his words, but, okay, so all this litany of disaster, all this litany of chaos he's given, all this terrible, terrible tragedy he has foretold. And then he says, but, not a hair of your head will perish. That's just ridiculous. At the very least, every one of them is going to die. At worst, before they die, these are people who are going to be betrayed to the powers that be. These are people whose families are going to be torn apart with disharmony. These are people who are going to be arrested. They're going to be thrown into prison. They're going to be tortured, and they're going to be executed. Certainly all of his immediate followers and many, many others. And yet, not one hair of your head will perish. Say what? What is he talking about? Clearly, in this verse, Jesus is not speaking in material, physical, time-bound terms. He is speaking symbolically. The head he is speaking of is not that thing that rests on top of your neck. That head is going to perish. Sorry, it's just a fact. Every hair on your head physically is going to perish. So Jesus is talking about some other head, some other reality, some other dimension of being. And in fact, he goes on right away to make that clear, following up verse 18 with verse 19, in which in the New Revised Standard Version of the translation, he says, by your endurance, you will gain your soul. I'm not super keen on the translation gain. The Greek word is kasomai, and it can be translated as possess. By your endurance, you will possess your soul. That's your head. That's where not one hair on your head will perish. What Jesus is asking his followers to see is that there is a place within us which, no matter how much chaos there may be, no matter how much turmoil there may be, there is a place within us where we can know that nothing perishes, that nothing that is true and real and good and sound and strong in us, none of that can be swayed. And that's why, you know, I had to find a way to get around to it. Sorry, she's mine now. So that is why, yeah, don't undo that, otherwise Auntie comes with her. There we are. Oh, look. Oh, you can have that. So that is why we baptize infants. Because what we have said to Anne Margaret this morning, and she may not remember it at the time, but she's surrounded by love and goodness that will remind her. What we said to her this morning is that you have within you a reality, a truth, a light, a goodness, a beauty, a strength, and a peace that nothing in this time-bound, material, physical, tangible realm can ever undo. Yes, your world and may shake. Your world and may at times feel deeply troubled. Your world at times may seem confusing, bewildering, hard to understand. Your world may at times, I hate to break it to you, Mom and Dad, feel painful. Your world at times may make it hard for you to see truly and clearly. But the reality that we have announced today is that at the heart of your being, there is something more. We call it soul, we call it heart, or we call it spirit, or we call it life force, whatever you want to call it, I don't really care. In Christian tradition, we say that we see it fully and completely embodied in the person of Jesus. And we look at Jesus and we see that there is nothing that can defeat that force. We see that there is no power on earth greater than the love which is born in this little being. And so we trust that. It's almost, you know, what she needs to understand is that today we have announced that she's born with a $1 million check in her diaper. It's just in there. It's just there. She has everything she needs to be the person she was created to be. And so do you. The tragedy is that at times we forget who we are. We forget our true nature, and we start looking at those mountains that are shaking, and we start paying attention to all of those earthquakes, and we get overwhelmed by the wars and the signs in the heavens, and we get taken over by our awareness that there is anger and violence and hatred and pain and suffering in the world, and it so clutters our vision and so fills our minds that we're not able to see the truth anymore. And that's why we need to come here. We need to come here so that we can see clearly. So that we can see clearly that those things that cause us to be afraid are not, in the end, the ultimate and the final reality. They're not the truth. That they're just what's happening on the surface of life. On the surface of life, every hair on your head will perish. But there's another reality, a deeper reality. And we come here so that we might be reminded to look deeper, to look at this in ourselves and to see this truth. And to see this beauty, and to know that this reality is in fact who we are. It is our true nature. She is an image of the likeness and beauty of God that dwells in every person. And if I just keep talking, I can hold it forever.
time like?
You think
a couple hours? Okay. Yeah. I should probably stop. They get the point. Do they pass? He's unbelievable. Goodbye.
Here you go, Papa. I think if my dad was that big and strong, I'd be pretty chill too. There's no doubt every one of us here has lived long enough to know that there are hard times in life. When you come to the table and you open your hands and you receive a little piece of bread and a tiny sip of wine, what you're saying is, I affirm that there is a deeper reality to who I am, and that that deeper reality holds. In fact, William Butler Yeats was wrong. The center does hold. Things do not ultimately and fully fall apart. The reality is, anarchy does not carry the day. The blood-dimmed tide may be loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence may be overwhelmed, but it is not ultimately drowned. She is stronger than all of that. She has the capacity to open hearts to the deep reality of God's loving presence at the core of all existence. And sometimes, you know, Jesus is right. Sometimes it just takes endurance to know this. By your endurance, he says, you will possess your soul. You will sign that $1 million check, and it will be endorsed, and it will pay. Endurance means just sometimes the best we can do is put one foot in front of the other and keep walking on. And as we do, we find in our hearts and in our lives the beauty and truth that is stronger than the darkness.